Dart Frog.
Hey everybody, and welcome to a very special extended episode of Not Your Mother's Goose. I'm Topher Goggin, and today marks the beginning of our ascent to the top of the heap of Disney baddies with the Not Your Mother's Goose Tournament of Villains, complete with absurd analysis from the expert panel that you met a few months ago. We're also going to get a refresher course on Johnny Appleseed, roll out our bassoons to play Peter and the Wolf, and not roll out any bassoons when we return to Rapunzel's Jukebox with Andrew Mitchell. The villains are first, though. All the pairings and voting information will be on notyourmothersgoose.com, so be sure to check that out, and I really do hope you'll take just a couple seconds to cast votes, as that will make this a lot more fun. In the meantime, get out your brackets and pencils and get ready to pick some upsets. The announcement of our field of villains is coming up next. All right, time now for something I've been very excited about for a while. So there are plenty of great Disney villains out there. You know, they've got their own board game now, they get their own features in the park. But here's the question I have. Who is at the top of the villain heap? What would happen if instead of trying to off Snow White and Ariel, they were out battling against each other? Well, that is exactly what we are going to try to figure out. We're going to hold the Not Your Mother's Goose Tournament of Disney Villains. Just like March Madness, we've made up a bracket and the villains are going to go at it one-on-one until we crown a champ. And here's the best part. You get to help us make the decision. We will set up the battles and you will vote to decide the winner. If you want to participate, go ahead and stop by notyourmothersgoose.com. Sign up for the Goose Droppings email newsletter because that's where the ballots are going to be. The other thing you can do is just write down the matchups as we talk about them here on the show and email me at topher@notyourmothersgoose.com. And we'll tally the votes that way. And then you can feel free to offer any commentary about why you think a certain villain would win the battle. And if you come up with something particularly clever, maybe we'll even use it on the show. Now, it's time to talk about the field, and I'm going to do my best to channel Greg Gumbel from CBS to announce the opening round matchups. Then we'll come back later in the show and have our panel of experts, sort of like Seth Davis and Charles Barkley, take a way too serious look at who they think's going to win in the first round. And I'll just tell you right now, these folks have 4 children, but they also have 6 doctorates, so clearly this is a very productive use of their time. Anyway, on to the field. Our selection committee has analyzed the pool of possible villains and narrowed it down to 12. So we got 12 villains, 6 in an old school villain region and 6 in a new school villain region. And of course, that means there are vile folks that have been left out. Feel free to be just as outraged for them as you would be if your team Middle Tennessee State didn't make it into the basketball tournament. And we also, because it's 12, we have 2 first round byes in each region. So the 1 and 2 seeds are through to the Evil 8. And then we're going to play the 3 through 6 matchups to figure out who gets there. Let's start in the old school region. And there we've got the 3 seed, Captain Hook, who will bring his sword and his band of pirates to battle against the number 6 seed, who is Alice in Wonderland's Queen of Hearts. Then the winner of that matchup will move on to the Evil 8, where they've got the unenviable task of taking on the number 1 seed, Maleficent from Sleeping Beauty. The horns, the evil spells, the very high cheekbones, that is going to be a tall order for anybody. Now, on the other side of the bracket, we find the number 4 seed in old school, who is Cruella de Vil. You've got the fur coats, the 2-toned hair, and she's going to open her quest for the top villain title by trying not to get eaten by our number 5 seed, Shere Khan from the Jungle Book. And no matter who wins that, things are not going to get any easier as the victor is going to move on to a drag-out battle with the evil queen from Snow White. She's the number 2 seed of the old schoolers, and that rounds out the old school region. Over on the new school side, we've got thrilling action up and down the bracket there. We start with an African lion trying to take a bite out of a Greek god in the 3-6 game, as we've got 3 seed Scar from The Lion King, of course, rolling in from the Pride Lands straight down to the underworld to take on Hades from Hercules. The winner of that battle then advances to an Evil 8 matchup with our number 1 new school seed, and that's Aladdin's nasty guy, Jafar. Now, on the bottom part of that bracket, that's where we've got what might be our most interesting first round game, as 4th seeded Gaston has earned the right to battle against a lizard monster, the number 5 seed, Randall Boggs from Monsters, Inc. That means we've got Gaston's biceps against Randall's invisibility, and it's all for the right to move on to a really tough matchup against the number two seed, Ursula. So it's Ursula and Jafar with the byes in the new school region. So that's everybody who's in. Start telling me now, who got overseeded? Who did we leave out? Think about your votes. We'll be back in a little while with our panel to analyze the field and take this all way, way too seriously. It's the Tournament of Disney Villains here on Not Your Mother's Goose. Well, you know what they say. When you can, you always want to get your news from reputable sources. But when none of those are available, you can always come to me. Let's make our check of the headlines. Federal Reserve adjusts interest rates after reading the Berenstain Bears in too much inflation. New Tesla Fred Flintstone edition promises to take self-driving cars to the previous level. And in TV news, Remy goes on Wrong Chopped. Noted chef Remy the Rat of Ratatouille fame thought it was a dream come true. A call from his agent to say he'd been selected to compete on the well-known cooking show, Chopped. Little did Remy know, however, that it was not the Food Network's version of Chopped that was calling, but rather a new competition show with the same name. Imagine his surprise when he arrived on set and was greeted by Judy Cooper, better known as the Farmer's Wife, who burst to fame last year after chopping off the tails of three visually impaired mice. Quote, "Let's just say I noticed this Chopped set seemed to have a lot more mazes than stockpots," end quote, a distraught Remy noted after sneaking out through a hole in the floorboards. He added, "Also, the fact that the show was sponsored by the Ginsu Corporation didn't seem like such good news anymore." Remy went on to indicate that his confused agent does remain on staff, at least for now. The agent did, however, note that if any offers came in for Remy to be on Cutthroat Kitchen, it'd be wise to ask a few questions before accepting. That brings us to a break, and it's time to hit the showers and do some hair care.
Hey folks, Rapunzel here, and it's time to get down to the nitty-gritty. It's time to talk about dandruff. Washing with Head & Shoulders just wasn't enough for me. I still had another 32 feet of hair below shoulder level, and I have to tell you, it was flakes central. You'd have thought there was a snowstorm right here in my tower. But that's not a problem anymore now that I use Head & Shoulders Knees & Toes. Available only with a prescription, Head & Shoulders Knees & Toes will wash your flakes away no matter how long your locks might be. Now you can wear those black socks with confidence knowing you're as protected from the waist down as from the neck up. Fellas, that means you too. Even those unsightly back hairs will sparkle and shine with Head and Shoulders, Knees and Toes. Use caution, trying for the first time. Common side effects include dry scalp, split ends, nausea, death, and hangnails. Don't use Head and Shoulders, Knees and Toes in your eyes, ears, mouth, and nose. Now is your chance to find out why folks across the world, from Crystal Gale to Chewbacca, are washing their dandruff away with us. Ask your doctor if Head and Shoulders, Knees and Toes is right for you, and start singing in the shower today.
That's my cousin Trish for Head and Shoulders, Knees and Toes, which by my count makes her at least the third person we've had playing Rapunzel in an ad so far on the show. Perhaps we should try to keep that up and see if we can continue logging Rapunzels kind of like Doctor Who or something. On that note, let's get back to the news. You put your right paw in. Hokey Pokey Little Puppy wins talent competition at dog show. After only skimming rules, Arthur rushes to buy the sword in the store. And returning to entertainment news, Great Gonzo wins America's Got Talent. America's annual summer talent competition crowned another champion last night, with the Great Gonzo stunning audiences by claiming the crown. After previous performances that included riding a unicycle while doing long division and playing a ukulele inside a working dishwasher, the hook-nosed blue thing saved his best performance for the finale, deploying his famed human cannonball act to fly across the stage, through the windows of a Volkswagen microbus, and into a giant bowl of Caesar salad. Judge Heidi Klum deemed the act interesting. Gonzo's finale win edged out musical group Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem to claim the top prize. Meeting with the press afterwards, Gonzo said he looks forward to taking the show on tour as soon as romaine prices decrease. Not all of Gonzo's associates enjoyed the same level of success on the show. Fozzie Bear set a record for the quickest buzzer in series history, as Simon Cowell lit up his ex and pelted Fozzie with a cream pie less than 8 seconds into his first joke. Meanwhile, fellow judge Howie Mandel missed the finale entirely, as he was still recovering from injuries suffered from a Miss Piggy karate chop when she was eliminated during the live rounds. Peter and the Wolf. Oh my gosh, here we go again with another story with a wolf as the villain. Little Red Riding Hood, The Three Little Pigs, The Boy Who Cried Wolf. Other than maybe used car salespeople, IRS employees, and possibly earthworms, does anybody need a bigger PR overhaul than wolves? I'm thinking your average wolf could run for the Senate and suddenly be seen as being more honest and trustworthy than before. Anyhow, for this latest lupine smear campaign, we do have a very clever combo. It's a fairy tale meeting a symphony, with each character in the story being assigned an instrument in the orchestra. Peter, our hero of questionable prudence, gets a string quartet. The bird gets a flute. The dim-witted duck gets an oboe. The cat gets a clarinet. We've got the wolf on French horn, and the lumbering grandfather on a big-ass bassoon that makes sure there will only be one kid in town that can play that role, because he's the only one that's got a bassoon. We begin when little Peter goes out to play in the meadow, armed with his Winnie the Pooh-style pop gun. What he doesn't have, though, is a checklist to remind himself to close the gate, promptly allowing the family duck to wander off. Now, this does make you wonder if this duck might be related to Daffy, since most quackers would just go with the fly-over-the-gate method, whether it was open or not. Perhaps Prokofiev just couldn't find any instruments that sounded like an ostrich to him. Anyway, after the cat chases the bird and the duck around for a while, Gramps gets wind of what's going on and hauls Peter back inside for stupidly being out in the wolf-infested meadow. Grandpa locks the gate this time, but when Peter gets tired of watching his 17th straight episode of Paw Patrol, he gazes out the window to see that the wolf has not only shown up, but has swallowed the duck. Peter, of course, decides that the prudent course of action here would be to have Siri ask Animal Control, portrayed by the tuba, to swing by and catch the wolf. Yeah, right. No, Peter instead defies his grandfather and heads back out, this time with a rope. He scales the fence, which now has failed to keep both a duck and a five-year-old inside, and climbs up a tree. And then, with the bird creating a diversion, Peter lassos the wolf by the tail and hoists him up like Chewbacca and the crew in Return of the Jedi. Much like the dog who catches the car, though, Peter isn't quite sure what the next step is here. But not to worry, as it turns out that a band of hunters has been tracking the wolf, and they conveniently come strolling out of the woods at this very moment. Before they can shoot the wolf, however, Peter convinces them to take it to the zoo instead, thereby assuring himself one last fun zoo visit before his grandfather grounds his ass into eternity for this whole fiasco. Then, as a final send-off, the narrator tells us that we can actually still hear the duck alive, apparently quacking away on her oboe inside the wolf after being swallowed whole. Somebody get in touch with Little Red Riding Hood for pointers on what to do here. Johnny Appleseed. Not to be confused with legendary folks like John Henry, Paul Bunyan, or the apparently fictitious Dumbo the Flying Elephant, the Johnny Appleseed that you learned about back in first grade was a real guy. Though his early 1800s driver's license, of course, read John Chapman, Mr. Appleseed was a missionary and nurseryman who traveled around the upper Midwest planting everywhere he went. And boy, was he successful. Admittedly, if you checked out the dandelions in my yard, you'd decide that his cousin Johnny Apple Weed was the real horticultural star. But other than that, Mr. Chapman is more responsible for the overall success of apple-related products than Steve Jobs. Now, apparently the real John Chapman was more into planting tree nurseries than just spewing apple seeds wherever he went, like some sort of itinerant seagull dive-bombing cars at random. And frankly, some of the other facts you find about him on Wikipedia have the ring of things you might hear from Pinocchio. For instance, had a pet wolf, got his neck stuck in the fork of a tree, and was only saved when an 8-year-old cut the tree down. Okay. But at the end of the day, those aren't the details anybody cares about anyway. What I, and surely you, want to know is, did this guy really wear a cooking pot as a hat? Because if so, every person who has ended up dancing at a party with a lampshade on their head really doesn't have to feel so bad. Now, for the record, NPR votes yes on the cookpot theory. On the other hand, a website called The Environmentor votes no, offering the following important explanation. Quote, in reality, it wasn't a tin pot, but a tin hat that doubled as his cookpot. End quote. Well, now, there is an important distinction to get straight, because it would be weird to wear a pot as a hat, but making a tin hat and using it as a pot, everybody does that. Let's send Johnny straight to Fashion Week. So we're back now to break down the first round of our Tournament of Disney Villains. As I said earlier, I have reassembled our panel of experts. That's a group of folks that you last heard analyzing Jack and the Beanstalk and calling Jack some bad names. And I've tasked them, though, with sorting out the first round of the tournament. These folks have a large number of advanced degrees, and that surely will help them determine just how well Jafar would do in a fight. To review, the first round buys went to Jafar, along with Ursula, Maleficent, and the Evil Queen from Snow White. The opening round matchups are Scar versus Hades, Gaston versus Randall from Monsters, Inc., Cruella de Vil versus Shere Khan, and Captain Hook against the Queen of Hearts. Panel, give us some analysis. Take it away. Okay, welcome, panel. Thank you for joining us. We know that you are the foremost worldwide experts in Disney villains and have been putting a lot of work into getting prepared for this. Let's just start right off in the old school category, the old school region, where we've got the 3-6 matchup between Captain Hook and the Queen of Hearts. That on paper looks like an easy win for the captain, but should the captain be on upset alert here against the Queen of Hearts?
I mean, if you look at the Queen of Hearts, she is backed by at least 51, arguably more if there's jokers involved, selfless soldiers that are just going to lay themselves right on the line. And that's a lot of men to get through.
I think that's a really good point. If Captain Hook's on his own, he's in big trouble. Smee is really a key ally here. He seems to do a lot of the work.
To me, they're both pathetic. I mean, Hook was bested by a boy with a cardboard sword. And the Queen of Hearts had her skirt lifted over her head by a flamingo. It's really a tough call to decide who of these two is more pathetic.
All right, well, let's stay in that old school region. A very interesting matchup in the 4-5 game, because that's where we see Cruella de Vil taking on Shere Khan. Now, we know Cruella strong in the schedule against the dogs, but now she has to cross over against a feline. How does that play out?
So I'm protesting the inclusion of Shere Khan in this tournament because he's not really a villain. He's basically the Batman of the jungle. He had a traumatic childhood experience that understandably led him to pursue vigilante justice. I just don't think he's a villain here.
So does that mean he should be disqualified? He's not eligible for this tournament.
I think we let him stand, but he's not going to make it through this round for exactly the reason that you just explained. Our 4-year-old son today explained to us that Cruella has the upper hand by smoking cigarettes. His traumatic childhood experience was fire. She just has to wave that cigarette in front of his face and he's done. She just has to threaten him over a pile of dry brush.
Let's cross over to the new school region. We've got a couple of interesting battles there. A real contrast in styles in the 4-5 game where we've got Gaston taking on Randall from Monsters, Inc. What is the strategic approach for both of those competitors?
This is a really fascinating one. You've got one villain who can be invisible and another villain who really only cares about looking at himself.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, Gaston, he's a big guy. He's got some big biceps, but what is he really bringing into the villainous attack bin? Is he going to clobber somebody with his stein of beer or is he just going to put him in a chokehold? And how inebriated will he be by the time he gets to the matchup? I think it's an important thing to keep in mind.
Well, he has a similar strength to the Queen of Hearts in that he has a whole town behind him. It's a little tricky for Randall to manipulate that entire village.
You know, are they going to be slotted in prime time for the day? Are they going to have been day drinking all throughout the day to get to the 7 p.m. matchup? Or do they get slotted in the nooner game and they've only had a few hours to pregame?
And how many cameras are we talking? Because if Gaston gets like a glimpse of his own reflection, he might just be completely distracted and not stand a chance.
I'll tell you though, if you put Gaston on True TV, he'll be, that will be such a blow to his ego. half the people won't be able to find it. He needs the Jim Nantz CBS game. If he's on True TV, he might not even show up.
All right. Well, we'll keep that in mind. Now, the other side of the new school bracket is an interesting matchup because we've got a dishonest African animal ruler taking on a Greek underworld god. That's the 3-6 of Scar versus Hades. What's going to happen there?
I think we got to pay attention to the refs in this one. I think the refs are going to be on Hades' side. Nobody wants to cross the Lord of the Underworld.
I can't disagree. I mean, it's a tough bracket, but was Hades undervalued? Should he have really been the number one seed?
Is Hades a Disney character? I've never heard of him. I've seen a lot of Disney movies.
What?
It's one of the best Disney movies.
So he could be kind of that mid-major that that is overlooked, that people just don't know anything about.
Absolutely. I think he's going far.
He's got a lot of tricks up his sleeve. You can't discount Hades.
Just to get this straight, Dr. C, your analysis is you've never heard of Hades, and therefore he should be great.
Exactly. I mean, this is exactly how I play my March Madness brackets.
And how do those generally work out for you?
Well, this year I picked the winner and came in 7th.
Out of 7.
There was a couple of comments along the way there as to whether certain competitors might have been snubbed by the committee, some belief that Hades should have been seeded more highly. Is there anybody who didn't make the field that you feel like has a legitimate gripe that they're not in?
I think there's going to be a lot of talk about the exclusion of the wicked stepmother from Cinderella, but I think that's totally warranted, her exclusion. I mean, she's basically just your run-of-the-mill mean person. She's just not that special.
And also, all right, lacking in magical powers, but also somewhat terrifying, depending on the age at which you watch the movie. I think that Sid from the early on Toy Story movies.
That's where I was going.
He's quite terrifying, and I'm not quite sure how that would play out against anyone with any actual powers, because at the end of the day, he is just a kid who really probably needs to see a psychologist. But depending on your age when viewing said movie, he is quite terrifying.
True. I think the other one that we haven't discussed yet is that horrible guy from The Hunchback of Notre Dame, who is definitely the most evil of all Disney villains.
Oh yeah.
No special powers, but extremely evil.
He also looks like he's dressed in garb to be graduating from law school.
That he does.
Well, thank you very much, panel. We will talk to you here in the subsequent rounds, but that's some very insightful information, including, is Hades a Disney villain? Very useful to get that question answered once and for all. So we will see you in the next round. Please cast all your votes, and the tournament rolls on.
Well then, there you have it, folks. Everything you need to know about the first round of the Tournament of Villains. I got to say, that was quite a hoot to put together, even if we couldn't use about half of the things that we recorded. If that's what made it in, imagine what got edited out, which I will tell you included at one point a discussion as to whether Gaston would perform better and be more motivated if his game was played on Bastille Day because it's a French holiday. Fans of the Tour de France will understand where we're coming from with that. Anyway, remember, we need your votes ASAP so we can figure out who's moving on to the next round. You can either go to notyourmothersgoose.com and get signed up, or you can just email it directly to me at Topher, T-O-P-H-E-R, at notyourmothersgoose.com. We'll report back with the first round winners on the next show and then play the second round, so stay with us as we keep rolling all the way on to a champ. Meanwhile, if you want to fill out your own bracket, that's up to you. Just remember that this is the tournament where you don't want to pick any Cinderellas. We'll wrap up this jumbo episode with the return of Andrew Mitchell and Rapunzel's Jukebox. Andrew's back with a new song for us, and this one came together a little bit differently than many of the others. Back when he was finishing up the Run Around You song we played a couple shows back, he suggested that he'd really like to try a Sinatra tune sometime. And my first reaction to that was, doubtful. But of course, the way these things play out, I actually right after that started folding some laundry and had an idea that might work for New York, New York, and the next thing you knew, we had a song. This turns out to be particularly timely with the debut of our Disney Villains Tournament, as instead of New York City, we're off to the Pride Lands. Here is Andrew with Pride Rock, Pride Rock on Rapunzel's Jukebox.
Sometimes
start telling Zazu that I'm on my way. I'm gonna be in charge of it. Pride Rock, Pride Rock. These jungle bum blues ate grubs yesterday. That dumb stampede, it started it. Pride Rock, Pride Rock. I want to wake up in a grassland with wildebeests and find I'm king of gorge, the boss of the feast. My grub-eating crew keep belching away before they go and fart again. Find me, Pride Rock. If I just get back there, I'll finally cut my hair. I'll come and rule, Pride Rock, Pride Rock. Pride Rock, Pride Rock. I want to hand off a new kiddo to old Rafik. Old Nala's feeling the love, circle of life. Dad's in the clouds, give Scar a shove. These jungle bomb blues from running away. My stupid Uncle Scar, he started it on old Pride Rock. And if Nala takes me there, you know that Scar won't have a prayer. I'm here for you, Pride Rock, Pride Rock, Pride Rock.
Pride Rock, Pride Rock, from the marvelous Andrew Mitchell here on Not Your Mother's Goose. Now, don't let that influence your voting, but do keep in mind that Scar is locked in a tight battle with Hades in round one of our Tournament of Disney Villains, along with Gaston versus Randall, Cruella de Vil versus Shere Khan, and Captain Hook versus the Queen of Hearts. Remember that you can send your votes to me at Topher, T-O-P-H-E-R, at notyourmothersgoose.com, and you can also go to notyourmothersgoose.com online to get signed up for all the future ballots. We'll be back in a couple weeks. We'll have the first round results for you and the second round matches. Plus, we'll butter the bread with little Tommy Tucker and learn about David Copperfield's bold plan to escape from Rapunzel's tower on a new TV special. That's it for now. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Topher Goggin, and the goose is loose. I'll catch you next time on Not Your Mother's Goose.
Dart Frog.